On July 28, 2006, Christina Branham and Christopher Mittendorf, a young couple from Hardin County, Tennessee, were reported missing after they didn't show up for a visit with Chris's dad on July 27th. Days later, on August 1st, the couple's car was found abandoned in a field in Lawrence County, around 50 miles away from their home. Since that day, no trace of the couple has ever been found. It's been nearly 18 years since Christina and Chris vanished, and investigators are still searching for them. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. And each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you'll help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever platform you use. We'd love to have you. All right, so tonight we're going to be covering the disappearance of Christina Branham and Christopher Mittendorf. This case is a little different than other cases we've done. There's a lot of mystery around the cases that I usually cover. This one, as we go through it, it is a mysterious case, but it does seem like the popular opinion around town and amongst family members and some friends is that something bad happened to Chris and Christina, and they may know the motive behind it. Now, it's all speculation. It's all rumors. But based on what we're going to go through, I think a lot of people are going to come to the conclusion that something involving past behavior may have come back to bite Christina and Christopher. But I don't want you to go in with a skewed judgment. I think that's what happens in a lot of investigations is you go in with a specific idea of what happened and you have tunnel vision on that idea. And anything outside of those blinders, you miss as an investigator because you're not necessarily looking for the evidence that tells you what happened in the case. You're looking for the evidence that supports your hypothesis, your theory. And that's where we have a lot of problems in some of these investigations. And that's why we had to have a lot of unsolved cases is because it's not that the evidence isn't there. It's that the investigators didn't see it. So just like in those cases, the ones that are eventually solved are because new investigators come in and they look at the case with a fresh set of eyes without any preconceived notions. And they review all the facts and they may see something that others did not. And that may lead them down a different road, which ultimately results in a different outcome and hopefully a solved case. So that's why I'm covering it. Yeah, it may point in one direction. I may feel a certain way about it, but someone out there may feel a different way. At minimum, with this case, what you will find is that this is definitely a case where someone knows something. It's just a matter of, will they come forward or have they already come forward? You'll know what I mean by that as we progress in this story. So with that out of the way, let's dive into this week's case. Christopher Dale Mittendorf was born on June 20th, 1985. Now, unfortunately, we have limited information about Chris's early life, except that his mother's name is Cheryl. In 2005, 20-year-old Chris lived with his mom just outside of Savannah, Tennessee, in the 15,000 block of Highway 64. Now, this area is in Hardin County, which is located along the borders of Mississippi and Alabama. That summer, Chris began dating 16-year-old Christina Delane Branham, who was described as a, quote, happy-go-lucky girl. Now, Christina was born on December 30th, 1988, to parents William and Paulette. Similar to Chris, not much is known about Christina's background. By the time she started dating Chris, she was still in high school and had plans to join the Army after graduation. 6 months into the relationship, Christina moved in with Chris and his mother, Cheryl, and around that same time, Christina and Chris got engaged. On July 27, 2006, 6 months after the couple moved in together, Cheryl returned from work to find Christina and Chris weren't home. According to the Jackson Sun, Cheryl didn't think anything was wrong at first because she knew the couple had plans to go shopping earlier that day. And it seemed like the couple did in fact go shopping, their newly bought clothes were found on the bed. So Cheryl guessed that after dropping off their purchases, they went back out. Cheryl didn't start to worry until Chris's father and her ex-husband called to say that he was expecting the couple to visit him, but they hadn't showed up. When he tried calling their cell phones, no one answered. And it's important to note that they didn't answer Cheryl's calls either. The next day, both 17-year-old Christina and 21-year-old Chris were both reported missing by their parents, and an investigation began. On August 1st, the Lawrence County Sheriff's Department received a call about Christina and Chris's 1994 green Geo Prism. It was found abandoned off Granddaddy Road near OK Baptist Church in Lawrenceburg, which was around 40 to 50 miles away from their home. Following the discovery of the Geo Prism, the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, also known as the TBI, joined the investigation. A witness would later come forward and tell police that they saw the couple leaving the car off Granddaddy Road, then getting into a white car and driving away. A week later, on August 8th, the TBI and the Hardin County Sheriff's Department put out a press release asking for the public's help in locating Christina and Chris. Now, other than the press release, there were few articles written about the couple's disappearance in the following months. Now, why that was, it may become more clear as we go through this investigation, but on the surface, there just wasn't a lot of information to write about. In July of 2007, it had been a year since anyone had seen or heard from Christina or Chris. During that month, the police spoke with Lawrenceburg Now and mentioned that the couple disappeared, quote, in the wake of a crime in Hardin County. They didn't offer any further details of what the crime could be, just that they were working to determine whether it was connected to the couple's disappearance. The police said that they weren't sure if anything bad happened to Christina and Chris. They thought maybe the couple was hiding because they were afraid of getting in trouble with the law. Christina and Chris's mothers also spoke to Lawrenceburg Now. Chris's mother Cheryl said, quote, "We just want to know their whereabouts. Since their disappearance, we haven't heard or seen anything of them." She added, quote, "They're not in any trouble. We just want them to be found. We just want to know that they're all right." The parents of the missing couple also issued a joint message to their children. It said, quote, "Please let us help you. We will keep you safe and help you get out of whatever made you become missing. We love you and miss you very much. We will never stop looking or praying for your return. All it takes is one phone call." In May of 2008, friends and family of Christina and Chris put up flyers around Savannah asking for information that would help find the couple. Chris's mom, Cheryl, told the Jackson Sun that since nearly 2 years had passed, they hoped someone might step forward with information. Cheryl described Chris as an outgoing guy who wouldn't disappear without contacting his family. Okay, let's take a quick break from the case to talk about this week's sponsor, Miracle Made. Did you know that your temperature at night can have one of the greatest impacts on your sleep quality? If you wake up too hot or too cold, I highly recommend that you check out Miracle Made's bed sheets. Inspired by NASA, Miracle Made uses silver-infused fabrics and makes temperature-regulating bedding so you can sleep at a perfect temperature all night long. So like I was just saying, these sheets have a lot of science behind them. Using silver-infused fabrics, which is inspired by NASA, these sheets are thermal-regulating and designed to keep you at a perfect temperature all night long so you get a better sleep every night. Not only are these sheets temperature-regulating, but they're also self-cleaning. Because they're infused with silver, they prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth, leaving them to stay cleaner and fresh 3 times longer than other sheets. And it's not just about science and technology, it's also about quality and comfort, especially when it comes to your sheets. And Miracle Sheets are no exception. They're luxuriously comfortable without the high price tag as other luxury brands, and they feel just as nice, if not nicer, than the sheets that are used in 5-star hotels. These sheets are literally designed for your skin, so stop sleeping on bacteria because, as we all know, bacteria can clog your pores, causing breakouts and acne, and no one wants that. So sleep clean with Miracle. Go to trymiracle.com/detective to try Miracle Made sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%. And if you use my promo code detective at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. And Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund. So upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made today. Just go to trymiracle.com/detective to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40%. Once again, that's trymiracle.com/detective to go treat yourself. Thank you again to Miracle Made for sponsoring this week's episode. Now, by this point, Cheryl had stopped working and she was spending her days and nights by the phone, hoping for a call that would shed light on Chris and Christina's disappearance. She was fully dedicated to uncovering the truth about what happened to them. The Hardin County Sheriff also spoke to the Jackson Sun, and he mentioned that investigators had received calls about sightings of the missing couple all the way from Atlanta, Knoxville, and Oklahoma. However, none of these leads panned out. The sheriff revealed that while authorities were still exploring all possibilities, they now suspected foul play. However, no suspects had been identified, and the sheriff said, quote, "It's a situation where we don't know what happened. The unknown is what's so tragic for the family and everyone else." Just a few months later, on July 22, 2008, tragedy struck Christina's family again when her 27-year-old brother Charlie was murdered by his father figure and boss, Ken Qualls. Charlie and Ken had known each other since Charlie was 9 years old and Ken started coaching him in football. Ken had taken on the father figure role in Charlie's life, often filling in to do the things that Charlie's dad wasn't doing. Charlie also started working for Ken at his furniture store, Savannah Furniture Exchange, and he continued working there into adulthood. Now, according to the Jackson Sun, at around 11 a.m. on July 22nd, police were called to the front of the furniture store with reports of a shooting. When they arrived, they found Ken seated in the driver's side of his truck, with Charlie slumped over in the passenger's side. He was pronounced dead at the scene. Ken told the police that he and Charlie were in the store when they started arguing about money from selling scrap metal. The day before, Charlie had taken some scrap metal to a dealer for Ken, but Ken believed he didn't get paid enough. He suspected Charlie of either taking some of the metal or the money. As they argued, they went out to the truck to drive to the dealer's place, and that's when Ken shot Charlie. Now, interesting enough, this was not the first time that Ken had shot and killed someone. According to the Jackson Sun, back in 1991, Ken shot two men he thought were trying to rob his home. One of the men, Joey Harris, died, while the other survived. When the police arrived, they found that the men had been shot outside of Ken's home, which showed no signs of a break-in. They further learned that Ken was under the influence of alcohol, marijuana, and Valium. Ken later went to trial for second-degree murder, but was acquitted because the jury thought he acted in self-defense. In the following years of his acquittal, Ken's aggressive behavior continued. In 1992, Ken's wife contacted the police to report that he had attempted to choke her, resulting in bruises on her face and her neck. Authorities searched for Ken and found him driving down the street with a loaded rifle at his feet. Additionally, on the passenger seat of the vehicle was a jug containing what seemed to be washing powders and alcohol, with a paper towel wick protruding from the opening, resembling what appeared to be a Molotov cocktail. Ken was promptly arrested and charged with two counts of unlawful possession of a weapon, driving under the influence, and aggravated assault. He ultimately pleaded guilty to two counts of unlawful possession of a weapon, DUI, and simple assault, receiving a 60-day jail sentence. The Jackson Sun reported that in the years leading up to Charlie's murder, Ken continued acting erratically. Multiple witnesses informed the police of Ken's threats to kill others and recounted at least one instance where he brandished a gun and place it against the person's head and threaten their life. Multiple people also reported being assaulted by Ken. Then, as we know, on July 22, 2008, Ken shot and killed Charlie. He was originally charged with first-degree murder and the trial was set for June 2009. However, just 2 days before the trial, Ken pleaded guilty to voluntary manslaughter and received a 10-year sentence with a chance of parole after serving only 4.5 years. Charlie's mother, Paulette, told the Jackson Sun that she was extremely upset over Ken's plea deal, which she had learned about on the evening news. She had been prepared for trial and hoped to see Ken imprisoned for life, which would have been a possibility if he was found guilty of first-degree murder. Now, authorities explained to the Jackson Sun that several factors led to the plea deal. Since Charlie and Ken knew each other well and had been arguing over alleged stolen property, the jury might have seen the shooting as provoked. Additionally, Ken's previous acquittal and his status as a prominent businessman raised concerns that he might be acquitted again if the case went to trial. With the plea deal, they ensured a longer sentence for Ken compared to what he might have received if convicted of voluntary manslaughter at trial. Paulette shared with the Jackson Sun that Ken apologized to her after the shooting and said he found out that Charlie had not stolen from him. Paulette told the Sun that she had never seen Ken angry before and was shocked by his actions. She speculated that he might have been under a lot of stress and just snapped. And although she forgave Ken, she couldn't shake the hatred she felt for him, knowing he had been the one who had taken her son's life. So now we have a situation where Paulette is without two of her children, Charlie and Christina, and I bring up the Charlie-Ken situation not only because that in and of itself is horrific to think that a young man lost his life for something he didn't even do, he didn't steal the medal or the money, but to show a pattern of behavior with Ken, to show a history of violence, criminal activity, the willingness to not only threaten someone's life, but to actually take it two times. So when I talked at the top of the show, I talk about having those blinders on, that tunnel vision, and looking at one specific theory because the evidence points that way. Well, it's important to look out at outside factors as even if they're not really the best scenario that's being presented so far, but to look at outside circumstances, to look at the people that were surrounded by our two victims and to think, is there a possibility that this individual who has a history of violence, could they somehow be connected to their disappearance? Now, I want to go on record and say that Ken has never been publicly named as a suspect in Christina and Chris's disappearance, but it is important to still mention it, I think, as far as when we're trying to figure out what actually happened and who could be responsible for this. So that being said, I want to keep it in your heads. I don't think it's something that we should focus all our attention on, but it is a variable that should be considered. And I really hope that at the time it was, I'm going to assume for this conversation that they did look into Ken. And for all we know, there was some type of exculpatory evidence that ruled him out as a suspect. Because as we know, this case has still not been solved. And this all happened around 2009. So having this information didn't change the course of this case, and the investigation into the disappearance of Christina and Chris continued. Now, in or around 2009, an age-progressed photo of what Christina might look like at 21 years old was released. The following year, Chris's mom, Cheryl, told the Jackson Sun, quote, "I can't move on. My age has changed, but my life has stopped. It's like walking a tightrope. You hope they're still alive, but knowing anything would be better than this. If they were dead, I think their bodies would have been found. It's so frustrating for me." Christina's mom, Paulette, also spoke to the Sun, stating, quote, "It's been a living hell. You spend your time walking the floors and looking out the windows, hoping they will come back, but in your heart, you know they're not." Paulette went on to say that she knows that Christina wouldn't have just run off, and that the hardest part was wondering if she was still alive. Paulette and Cheryl both talked about being frustrated by the lack of communication from law enforcement. Paulette mentioned that she follows up on every lead she receives and reports it to investigators, but it was difficult to get information back from them. Cheryl added that she wasn't even sure if the police were working on the case or not because they wouldn't contact her. She hadn't heard anything in nearly 3.5 years. Now, I want to weigh in on this real quick because I think it deserves to be talked about, because I'm sure a lot of you are hearing that and thinking, wow, the victim's mother hasn't been contacted in 3.5 years. How is that possible? How is that right? And the short answer is, it's not. I'm not going to mention the case, but there are certain investigations that I've been part of, or I was part of, where the case is a cold case, over 20 years old, and as you would expect, the family members have not let it go, and they will never let it go. And for them, they wake up every day living that nightmare. It's not a job for them. It's someone they cared about. So although police officers and detectives do take their work home with them, we do have an ability to compartmentalize these cases and put them aside when we need to go focus on our friends and our family and our lives. They don't have that luxury. So when you come in as a detective on Monday morning and you have a voicemail or a text message from them, you got to return their call. You got to respond to their text. It can be short. It can be to the point, but at least let them know that you're still thinking about them and you respect them enough to return their call, because that's really what it's about. And I don't understand for the life of me, regardless of quote unquote how annoying some of these family members can be. And I put that in air quotes because, again, I'm putting this in the context of a detective having to work thousands of cases. If someone's blowing up your phone every day, all day, it can be tiresome. And I'm not expecting them to return every single call, because if you do, I will say this, they will just keep calling you, keep texting you. But periodically, once a week initially, then maybe once a month, there should be a communication between the lead investigator and the at least the point of contact from the family to let them know, hey, unfortunately, nothing new as of now. I can't share anything we have internally, but just so you know, we're still open, we're still here, and if something new comes in and there's something to be investigated, we will do it, and if it leads anywhere, you will be the first to know. I have never been in the position of a family member who's lost someone like that and had to be on the other side of it, but I can only imagine how far that would go for them to know that you had enough respect for them to call them back and at least reassure them that, hey, I'm here, we're not going anywhere, and hopefully something happens where we can eventually solve this case for you. I think that in and of itself is not even a nice gesture, it's a necessary chain of events. It should happen. And if it's not happening and I was in charge, that detective would be in a lot of trouble. Just putting it out there. Okay, so now that I've said that, back to the investigation, because this case took an interesting twist. Because both Paulette and Cheryl both shared that they believed a man from Hardin County who passed away in the spring of 2010 might have had information about Christina and Chris's disappearance. This man was George Eddie Bogus, also known as Bad Egg. Now, his obituary described him as a self-employed horse trainer and a member of the Rough Riders. Now, Cheryl told the Jackson Sun that she heard Chris and Christina might have been involved in a robbery or a burglary at Eddie's place just before they vanished. Later, after the couple disappeared, she found a lockbox in her home containing items, including documents, that belonged to Eddie. And from what Cheryl had heard, Eddie wasn't someone you wanted to cross. If he had found out that the couple had stolen from him, it's possible that that could have led to their deaths. Now, unfortunately for the investigation into the couple's disappearance, Eddie himself was murdered on March 21st, 2010. That day, his wife Shannon shot him multiple times with a revolver in their home. She called 911 and told the dispatchers what happened. She and Eddie got into a fight over a remote control. Eddie then physically attacked her and she defended herself by shooting him. She was taken to the hospital and treated for a mild concussion, bruises, and bleeding from one ear. The Jackson Sun reported that Eddie had a prior criminal record of theft and drug charges. And according to Eddie's family, he and Shannon had a history of physically abusing each other. Prior to the shooting, local authorities had taken Shannon to a shelter to escape Eddie, but unfortunately, as it often happens, she left the shelter and went back home. The police spent the next 4 months investigating Eddie's murder and Shannon's claims of self-defense. They learned that around a year before the shooting, Shannon had allegedly tried to hire two people to kill Eddie. Shannon said her husband was abusive and she was tired of being the main financial supporter of the family. These people told the police that they didn't take Shannon seriously and thought she was just kidding around. But because of these attempts to hire a hitman and the fact that Shannon had to pull the revolver's trigger multiple times to kill Eddie, authorities thought that Shannon had planned Eddie's murder in advance. Shannon was then indicted on first-degree murder charges. She later went to trial, where she was acquitted because the jury believed she acted in self-defense. Now, part of the reason I included the murder of Eddie and the specifics surrounding it is because it would have been great if they had talked to Shannon about Christina and Chris after her arrest and before trial to see if she would potentially roll on Eddie to snitch on him. We don't know how close they were beforehand and if Eddie had said anything to her, but it would have been a good carrot to dangle to say, hey, listen, you know, while we're looking into things, you know, and we're trying, you know, you're trying to paint this negative picture of Eddie. We've heard rumors that he may be connected to the disappearance of Chris and Christina. What do you know about that? And maybe she would have taken that as an opportunity to build her own case by saying, yeah, he was a bad guy. Not only did he do these things to me, but he also told me that he did these things to Chris and Christina. And, you know, this is where you can find them to prove what I'm saying. again, may not have happened, or from, you know, maybe I don't, you know, we're not aware of it. Maybe that did happen. But if that's what transpired, I think that law enforcement should probably come out and say that, considering there's speculation around Eddie being involved in the couple's disappearance. And I'll also say this, I don't know the current status of Shannon, but if she's still alive, it's not too late. Investigators, if any of you are watching this, if she hasn't been spoken to about this scenario and she's still currently, you know, willing to speak to you, even though she's been acquitted, she may not. What do you have to lose? Take a ride by, go speak to her. You know, years have passed. Maybe she'll be willing to say something out of respect for Paulette and Cheryl. You never know. All you can do is ask and see where the chips fall. Now, sometime that same year, around November, when all this was happening with Shannon and Eddie, Cheryl and Paulette spoke to WMC-TV about what they believe happened to their children. I will say this, they believe that both their kids got mixed up with a bad crowd, and they described this crowd as a, quote, drug mafia, and that they were capable of doing terrible things. And I'm going to talk about these rumors, but just a quick little trigger warning for anyone. It is a little graphic. We don't know if this is what really happened, but I just want to make you aware of it because it is pretty descriptive. Now, one of the things that Paulette mentioned hearing was that a couple was taken to a motel room in Parsons. They were then blindfolded and their hands were tied behind their backs. Now, Christina had been raped and beaten while Chris was killed right away. And after all of this happened, they were then taken to a barn, chopped up into pieces, and fed to the pigs. Cheryl also mentioned hearing a rumor that Chris was beaten with a baseball bat and Christina was knocked in the head with a rock. Now, WMC-TV reported another rumor suggesting that the couple was taken to an area outside of Savannah near a popular teenage hangout called Gator Rock. Once they were in this area, Christina and Chris were both killed and dumped in a well. Now, again, just to clarify, everything that I've just laid out to you, these are all rumors. Nothing has been substantiated, and law enforcement has never come out and said, hey, yeah, listen, we do believe that one of these rumors is a viable piece of information. This is just speculation at this point. But if you remember what I said at the top of the show, yes, they could be rumors, but we are also looking for someone to come forward with information. And more than likely, if someone out there did know what happened to Chris and Christina, they may not want to be directly connected to it for fear of retaliation from the people that did it or being potentially implicated in the crime. So it could have been said in passing to just get the information out there. It could have been said while someone was drunk at a bar. So there could be some credibility to this. It may be the truth, unfortunately, but we may never know. But I did want to bring up these rumors because there is a real possibility that what I'm describing here did actually happen. Now, Cheryl has said she doesn't know what to think anymore. She wants to believe that her son and Christina are still alive, but deep down, she knows that they're probably gone. And at this point, she just wants to have their remains back. Both Cheryl and Paulette emphasize that they have no closure. Paulette said, quote, "All we want is our kids. We don't care about their drugs or their habits. We want our kids. That's all we want." Over the following years, there was little reporting on the disappearances of Christina Branham and Christopher Mittendorf. In July of 2023, 17 years had passed since they went missing. At that time, the police didn't provide any updates into the investigation. However, we know that their families are still desperate for answers. All right, let's get right into this perspective, and it's not going to be a long one because I think we've kind of weighed in throughout the episode. And as I had said at the top of the show, I think a lot of you are going to leave this episode feeling similar to the way their parents feel. And I'll just come right out and say I feel the same way as well. I don't know who directly was involved with this. I think that this is a smaller community, and more than likely there are individuals within that community who knew what Chris and Christina were up to. There probably was some drug activity. There may have been some robberies and burglaries as well. They may have been in multiple different criminal acts at the time, and they may have made a few different enemies. And I wonder if that's part of the reason, and I'm not saying this is justified, detectives weren't as gung-ho about solving this case because maybe Christina and Christopher were already on their radar for other reasons. And that can displace the psyche where they're thinking, hey, You know, this is street justice. This is what happens when you play with fire. When you're robbing from criminals, the criminals are going to come take care of you themselves. And so I don't know what law enforcement knows off record that they haven't come out and said publicly, but speaking with confidential informants and witnesses who are not willing to go on the record, they may have learned information about Christopher and Christina that wasn't originally known, which is why law enforcement has come out and said publicly that, one, they believe that foul play was involved, and two, that this disappearance happened during a time of a crime wave, that something was going on. And I wonder if that crime wave was something that both Christina and Chris were involved with directly. Now, who's directly involved with this, we'll probably never know. It could be a combination of the things that I've said tonight. We talked about Eddie Bogus, who was a bad dude, and if they had stolen from him, yeah, that's a potential motive right there. And as I said when we were talking about it, if that's the case, that should be explored and maybe go talk to Shannon. Although, like I said, I don't know how willing she would be to speak now. But there could be other Eddie Boguses of the world that Christina or Chris or a combination of both had crossed over the years. And it was a matter of time before someone came knocking at their door. Now, how the crime actually went down, your guess is as good as mine. It sounds like maybe while they were out that day in a public area, one of their enemies spotted them and maybe confronted them or waited till they went home. And, you know, they're at home dropping off their belongings. And all of a sudden, some people show up knocking at their door and they're probably in possession of guns or knives or a combination of both. And against their will, Chris and Christina are forced to leave with them, and not wanting it to connect back to the offenders, they drive about 40 to 50 miles away from the house. We don't know if Christina or Chris were actually driving the car, but they're forced to drive out there. They leave the car in an area where it would cause confusion to law enforcement as to what happened to them, which there's multiple rumors about whether Chris and Christina had just fled the area because of the enemies or they were taken by someone. And I would give more credibility to the idea that Chris and Christina deliberately left their car there and fled on foot because they got tied up with the wrong people if Chris or Christina had reached out to their mothers after the fact, even if it was years later, but just to let them know, hey, we're sorry we had to leave. We screwed up. We're okay. We love you. Maybe someday we'll see each other again, but for right now, it's just not safe for you or for us. They never did that. And it appears that they had a pretty good relationship. So the fact that they never reached out is highly suggestive that they're not able to. And more than likely, that's because they're deceased. But back to what I was saying about this chain of events that potentially took place. They drive out to this location and then this witness sees Chris and Christina get into another vehicle. That's obviously your offender vehicle. How many people were in there? Who else was around? We don't know. But whatever happened from that point on is a mystery. And we talked about some of the rumors. I hope for their sake and for the sake of the family that's not the case. But it could be a variant of that where, again, they stole from the wrong person and a message was sent to both of them and anybody else who was involved with some of the crimes they may have been involved in. And I do want to step back for a second and just say none of this is confirmed. I'm going a lot off what we know and what Chris and Christina's own parents have said. They're talking to everyone. Their ear is to the ground. They're hearing things. And for them to come out publicly and say what they've said so far and to make these pleas to them saying, hey, listen, we don't care what you were doing. They probably have it on pretty good authority that's what was going on. And maybe they didn't know about it at the time, but after the fact, through the people they're talking to, have learned that both Chris and Christina were living another life that they were unaware of. But as I said at the top of the show, although the information is leading us in one direction, that doesn't mean it's the right one. Just because it's the most likely scenario doesn't mean it's what actually happened. So we have to keep all avenues open until we know definitively what happened to Christina Branham and Christopher Mittendorf. And there may be someone out there who hasn't come forward yet, who may have information or may hear about this case for the first time and be from the area. And something that I said tonight triggers a memory of theirs where they have another potential sighting that does check out when law enforcement looks into it. So with that being the case, let's recap real quick. Christina Branham and Christopher Mittendorf were last seen on July 27th, 2006 in Hardin County, Tennessee. Their 1994 green Geo Prism was found abandoned around 50 miles away in Lawrence County on August 1st. And since then, there has been no sign of them anywhere. Now, Christina at the time was 17 years old with brown hair and brown eyes. She had a pierced navel and a tattoo of a rose on her right hip. She stands about 5 feet 2 inches tall and weighs around 150 pounds, and today she would be 35 years old. Now, Chris, who was 21 years old at the time, was last seen wearing a t-shirt with a design on the front, old navy blue jeans, a white baseball cap, and white tennis shoes. He has brown hair, blue eyes, is 5 foot 4 inches tall, and weighs approximately 125 pounds. He also has a scar on his left hand between his thumb and forefinger from a burn, and today he would be 38 years old. Anyone who has seen Christina Branham or Christopher Mittendorf, or who has additional information about this case, is asked to contact the Hardin County Sheriff's Office at 731-925-3377 or the TBI at 1-800-TBI-FIND. That's TBI Find. I want to send my thoughts out to Paulette and Cheryl and the rest of their family. I know that they're resigned to the fact that they're not going to see their children again, but I appreciate the fact that at this point, they just want answers. Good or bad, they just want to know what happened. And at minimum, we should be able to give them that. So I'm really hoping that someone comes forward with the information that we need to verify what happened to Chris and Christina so that they can go on with their lives knowing definitively what happened to their children. I want to thank you guys for being with me here tonight. Everyone stay safe out there. I'll see you next week.